Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, we have an outside guest on the show. I mentioned to you a while back that I'm going to try to have external guests come in more regularly from time to time. The challenge has always been, from my perspective, is who to have on, because I want to do well by the audience. I want to do well by you guys. And I don't want to just have any old Joe Schmo on. I don't want to have folks who haven't really worked in the space, and even folks who have worked in the space many a times. And forgive me for saying this, but I'm just going to come out with it. They're part of the problem. So I don't want to really have people who are part of the problem on the show spreading stuff that is problematic. And folks might say, oh, Gary, you might not be open-minded enough or something like that. I understand that perspective. I totally get it. And I try to be as charitable as humanly possible. But I think the priority for now is to get folks on here who are serious practitioners or serious change agents in what is desperately needed here in American soccer, which is massive change, massive reform, massive disruption. And I think a lot of you guys would agree with those last sentiments. So we have a gentleman by the name of Joe on the line. He is the founder of a company called Soccer Visa. He currently resides in Romania, and he is the owner or part owner of a third division professional Romanian club. So that's already kind of interesting in and of itself. He's been an owner for a year at this point. And, you know, he reached out via Instagram, and Benny runs our Instagram account. So Benny mentioned to me, hey, Gary, like, what do you think about having this gentleman as a guest? They reached out to us. They want to be on the show. And I'm like, okay, well, let me take a look. And I took a look at the Instagram page, and I took a look at their YouTube channel. And after just a couple of reels or videos, I'm like, you know what? Very interesting guy. I like his posture. Let's have him on. So all that to say, I have not done a full vetting of Joe, but I like what I saw initially. So here it is, a conversation with a third division Romanian professional club owner. I hope you enjoy. But first, what sponsors this episode is nobody from the outside. It's ourselves. We offer products and services online for coaches and for parents. For coaches, you want to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium coaching education programs for you there. It is rooted in the pioneering work of my brother, Brian Kleiben, who helped make a seismic shift in a positive, a vastly positive manner here in American soccer. You get to see and hear him in an unscripted environment, training his own teams, his own players, and there's nothing like it out there in the ecosystem. You can go and search and try to find something like it. I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. So the best time to have joined was yesterday. The next best time to join is right now. And the longer you wait, the further behind you're going to be. Again, coaches, 343coaching.com. If you happen to be coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you can go to 7v7coaching.com. And parents, we don't want to leave you behind at all. I know it's very important for you guys to mentor your kids in a appropriate, proper way with an educated perspective on the game. It's hard to get that perspective if you haven't played, if you haven't played at a high level, if you haven't coached, if you haven't been a practitioner in the ecosystem. So you need a solution, guys. Honestly, that's my perspective. You need a solution. And what exists out there in the marketplace, once again, I'm not shy to say it, is not great. So we built a solution ourselves. You go to 343masterclass.com. Parents, I repeat, go to 343masterclass.com. It is a minor investment for a very important long-term gain for your kids. All right, here we go. I hope you enjoy this episode and extract a whole bunch of gold nuggets. Here we go. Man,
how are you doing? Nice to meet you. Thank you for your time.
No, pleasure to meet you. Hey, tech support?
Yeah, just one of my employees helps me out.
Love it. Are you in Romania right now?
I'm in Romania, yeah.
That's so cool. I've been to Europe, oh gosh, I don't even know how many times at this point, but there's a few countries I haven't visited. Romania is one of them. It's on the bucket list, but one of these days, man.
It's beautiful. It's hidden. Like, you know, when I bought the team in Romania, we were like, what are we getting into? But it's probably the opposite of anything you think of, like very modern, very clean, very safe.
Are you Romanian?
No, I'm Italian.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, so what sent you there?
So it was a long story, but we had a team in Costa Rica we own, which I love what I do here in Romania, but I regret leaving Costa Rica because it was a lifestyle that was just out of this world. So we owned a pro team in Costa Rica, and then it grew like crazy and it was really good. And we were like, well, most of our players come to us and then we move them to Europe. So they're paying a ticket to come to us and then they're paying a ticket to go to Europe. So doesn't it make sense to own your own European team? So that's kind of long story. We started fishing around and we came here.
Cool, brother. So I think we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things. I didn't prepare anything. This kind of came out of the blue, if I'm being sincere. So Benny does a lot of our content development work. And he's like, hey, Gary, you know, on Instagram, Soccer Visa reached out. And I don't follow so many folks in soccer. And I'm like, well, Benny, we often don't have guests on the podcast. You know, usually it's you and I, and we're very selective. He's like, oh, but Gary, I think you'll like this guy. You know, check out his stuff. So I'm like, oh, okay, fine. So I go and I go and check out. And the first video that I play from you, I don't remember if it was on YouTube or on your Instagram channel, you're basically telling your own story in abbreviated form of being a professional player and how it ended for you and how you look back and maybe you would have made different decisions, you know, looking back on your career and the way you delivered it and the truth behind it. Because I don't know how much of my background you're aware of, but I've been working with professional soccer players for quite a long time. As an agent, as an owner of an agency, there's players in Europe and in Major League Soccer and Liga MX, et cetera, et cetera. And I see it time and time again, right? They're youth players. They become professionals. And a lot of what you said, I mean, really hits home with me because I see it firsthand with these guys and how their careers end up taking a nosedive. They're going like this, and then it goes like this, and then it goes like this and into the ocean. So immediately after that video, Joe, I'm like, yes, okay, let's talk to Joe, 100%.
Well, first off, I appreciate you having me on the show, and thank you. And it's true, though. Like, I didn't have anyone tell me how the real industry is. So, like, if I would have known, yeah, I would have been still playing, I think, you know? So I appreciate you having me on the show. And we could talk about anything. Like, we could talk about football, anything you want.
Cool. Yeah, well, give us a little bit of your background just so that the audience here is aware of, you know, your work and where you come from and where you are now.
Perfect. So I was born in Italy and I moved to America when I was 5 and I grew up in Connecticut, immigrant family, worked hard, restaurant business, went to high school in Connecticut, was a really good player for high school at the time. And back then there was no academy, MLS Next Pro, ECNL. It was like everyone played high school. So pretty good high school player. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar. Maybe you're an agent. We're an agent. Do you remember Marcus Tracy?
Sounds familiar.
Wake Forest Tournament Trophy winner. So he's like,
Yeah.
So our conference was like really good. So I went to high school and I always wanted to play pro. I didn't want to go to college route because I sucked at school. I hated school. So I wanted to go pro. And going into junior year, I moved to Italy, back to Italy. And I played for San Nidana's youth team. And it was like a reality check. It was like, shit, I'm away from home. And these kids play like that. Like, I was really good where I am, but even here with the Serie B youth team, the level's really high. So I ended up not getting a first team contract. San Nitana, I played with them in their youth program for about 6 months and moved back to the States and finished high school. And I did really well in high school, had some colleges interested, but my grades sucked. So we had a family friend whose name is Giovanni Savarese. Do you know him?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So he came down to my parents' restaurant one night to eat. I was like, Gio, like, I want to play pro. Like, I want to. He's like, all right, well, come train with the first team and let's see how you do. And anybody knows Gio, like, he is the most generous, nicest guy you'll ever meet. And he just really just said, come do it. So, I went to train with the Metro Stars and ended up signing on. Didn't make a lot of money, $200 a month. That was what I was making, back then. And I trained with the first team and I played in the Super Y League. It was called the Super Y League U20. Got to the national finals with them. Got to play with like Mike Grella, Jonathan Barajo, guys that went on to have decent careers. I got released after the U20 League, the Super Y League. They didn't offer me a first team contract. And I just worked at my parents' restaurant and saved up money and flew around to every tryout you could think of. Like, you name it. There was Vancouver Whitecaps were in the USL back then. Seattle Sounders were in the USL. Atlanta Silverbacks were in it. North Carolina Railhawks. Like, you name it, a Rochester Rhinos, I would take a Greyhound. I would sleep in airports. I'd travel around trying to make a name for myself. Virginia Beach Mariners. And I ended up never getting anything. Did well, and they're like, we'll call you. And we'll call you turned into no one.
Sure,
call.
Sure.
So I said, you know, excuse my language, hope I can swear on here. Fuck it. I said, I'm going to just book a one-way ticket to England because I have an Italian passport. And I'm going to go try. Mm-hmm. And I slept in like one of my friend's uncle's couch and just got a job, worked two jobs, played in the seventh division, and slowly tried to make it. Never did. And then never did in England. Just played seventh division. And then I got a chance to go play USL Championship, or USL at the time. It's called Rio Maryland. And I did that. We did really well. Anthony Hudson was my coach, who was an interim head coach of the U.S. national team. Did that for a season. Didn't get offered a new contract. Went back to work at my parents' restaurant making pizzas. Guy walked in with an accent. And I'm like, it was a rainy day. I remember like it was yesterday. And I made him a pizza. And I was like, where are you from? You got an accent. He's like, I'm from Iceland. I was like, do they play football in Iceland? And he's like, yeah, they do. My brother's director of a second division team in the north of Iceland. Long story short, gave him my video. He mailed it out. It was a DVD. Mailed it out. They liked it. They flew me out. So it took about 5 years to get my first chance. They flew me out, gave me $300 a month plus one meal a day. And from there, my career kind of went on. And I got transferred from that team to the top league in Finland, where I spent 5 years. And then you saw my video. I kind of messed up once I got to where I was trying to go, you know?
Amazing, man. What an amazing story. And with that comes a ton of experience that you can't buy, right? And then this is what enables you, in my opinion. I don't know your personality background, how all that got formed, obviously, but I think the experience really crafts us to be able to then speak to the players in a certain way, right? And so, because you can flow with it. Obviously, when you talk to your players, I saw your locker room video also. I was trying to desperately do a little bit of research, Joe. So I saw your locker room video, super intense, super impassionate. Because I take it that you coach the actual team there too. Is that true? Like you own it and you coach it?
Yeah, I'm an owner and a coach. And you got to remember, a lot of the players, I have a program called Soccer Visa where guys pay to come out to me and get a chance. And I know what it's like to pay money to go to a tryout and things and not get a chance. So I actually signed the guys that come to our program. Like, it's not bullshit. And they're so good. There's some quality there, but they just don't understand what it's like playing in Europe, the pressure of being in Europe, you know. Like, in the States, there's playoffs. Here, it's $500,000 into the team. If we're in relegation or mid-table, I lost $500,000. And for them, they play the sport because it's a hobby back home. Like, oh, I play college soccer. I play with my friends. Even playing ECNL or MLS Next Pro Academy. Like, let's be honest, 95% of those guys don't go pro.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But to them, they got the great Adidas on. They got the great tournament. And here in Europe, it's not like that. It's different. Like, every game matters, you know?
For sure. And that's what I've been railing against here. So I'm kind of public enemy number one in the United States, dude, because I open my mouth too much. And I kind of, I don't want to say attack. I just speak the truth about the system here. And specifically, that since there is no promotion and relegation at the top level, and MLS is a monopoly that controls everything, that has enormous consequences at the pro level, at the second division, the third division, the youth level, you name it. It's all because there's no promotion and relegation, which touches on your point. There is no pressure over here like there is over there. You can come in last place here. It doesn't matter. See, I'll see you next season. Everybody have a good break. You know, eat okay, sleep okay, and we'll start training camp again in March or something like that. And Joe, I'm telling you, like, the players that we sent over to Europe, it's eye-opening for them. Eye-opening, because they don't also get the prestige. Unless you're like at a Champions League club or division, you know, first division team in the top leagues, you don't exist. So even if you're playing, I don't know, first division Norway, it's significant. It's important. I think it's a lot more competitive than MLS. But even if you're in first division Norway, outside of the top flight clubs like Bodo Glimt or something like that, you are invisible. Okay. You are invisible. But here in the States, like, you touched on it, dude. If you're playing MLS Next Pro, right? the franchise, Dimas franchise, takes pictures of you dripping, you know, in your clothing, walking up to the field. And then, you know, you share your stuff on Instagram and you get all this attention because people think you're something special. You don't exist in Europe.
No, I'm sorry. I don't even realize it. I get guys that come out to play for my third division team and they're like, mm-hmm. You know, I could run through third division because I played MLS next. And you're like, mm-hmm. They get out here and it's like, shit, no, you can't. You know what I mean? And even funny, you're talking about the relegation and promotion. That shit's not going to happen in the States.
This is a great topic. No, it's interesting. I understand where that sentiment comes from. I think the odds are severely against it because a business who has a monopoly wants to preserve their monopoly no matter what, right? And they basically, MLS basically controls the federation, 100%. U.S. Soccer. So U.S. Soccer is supposed to regulate the ecosystem, look out for the best interest of everybody involved. They don't do that. From the president to the vice president to the board of directors, they're all in MLS's pocket. They don't want to do the right thing. And MLS runs the show. And so I agree with you in that sentiment that it would never happen. But I'm the type of person who likes to say never, because, you know, folks back in the day would say, slavery will never end, Gary. It's impossible. You know, it's free labor. Like, well, the businesses, the people in power will never let it go. And I think if there's an abundance of educated folks, Joe, then that's a powerful movement that could.
I think you're spot on.
Do something.
I think you're spot on, and you're right. Don't ever say never. But here's my only issue, right? You said it best. Daddy's not going to let you guys succeed, which is MLS. A lot of people don't even understand that, and it's awesome you said that. Here's the other thing to it, though. Look. Mm-hmm. Does the American understand the same culture as a European football enthusiast or fan or supporter? So, like, for example, you put $20 million into a franchise, or 10 or 7, whatever it's going to cost to come in there, okay? Mm-hmm. And as an investor, you're not making TV. I own a club, right? So how do I make money? TV money, sponsorships, investors, player sales, ticket sales, merchandise sales. Realistically, at this current moment, what USL team is hitting all of those at enough money to cover their costs for the year?
I would say close to zero. and honestly, but again, Joe, and this is for the audience, not for you, because you're very knowledgeable. It's clear. It's because there's no promotion relegation also.
But wait, right? Wait. Yeah. So how? Because think about this. How do I say this? This is such a great topic, and I love this. Like, the fans understand the sport differently, right? It's live or die here. Like, they've got tattoos. Even my small club, right? Yeah. We get 3,000 fans each game. Or not now, we don't. But if we were winning, we would. Mm-hmm. But they have tattoos all over them. It's their religion.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny plays for New York, whatever. His parents are not going to have that same type of commitment. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? So I think you're fighting with the culture.
So a few things. I also love this topic. A couple things. Number one is, I think we too easily underestimate that in the United States, there is a huge soccer first hardcore demographic, but it's ignored and it's disenfranchised by the monopoly. Okay. I'll explain further. So I live in Southern California. Okay. So there's a little bit of a bias here, but in Southern California, just like on the East Coast, just like in Texas, there is an enormous Mexican-American, Latino-American population numbering in the millions, which is hardcore soccer first. And this is why you see such amazing ratings for Liga MX here in the United States. This is also why you see such enormous ratings for, say, the English Premier League, even though the Premier League games are on at 5 a.m. over here in Southern California, or 6 a.m, it doesn't matter. People get up and watch the game. And that entire demographic, Joe, is not participating in the American system. They don't go really and are into MLS at all. They think it's a joke. They think they don't care about it. They don't go and give money and attendance and all this stuff to the USL teams, because what's the point? They don't feel a part of it. You've got some white rich dudes or whoever running the show, and you can't say you're chance, you know, in the stadium, and you have to obey how they want you to behave in the stands. You know, they don't allow you to be hardcore here. So you can't even express yourself. So this entire population of millions, Joe, and I see at the youth level also, they are excluded from the mainstream game, the pro game. So what you've described, and I agree with you, but what you've described is the mainstream suburban, soft, middle to upper middle class, affluent demographic that's involved in the game. So that's why they're not hardcore. When I go to an MLS match, the people around me, they're like, hey, you know, little Susie's shopping for her prom dress, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're not even watching the game. They're not even watching the fucking game, dude.
Unlike me, eating popcorn and like, Yeah.
Or they'll talk about the fucking Raiders game and the games going on in the field.
And the kids who play youth sports, right, are running around in the back where they do concessions and not even worried about the game.
Correct. Where
in England, you got a five-year-old who's watching the game like it's his job. But here, I'm going to challenge you.
Go for it.
Well, not challenge you. I'm going to make you think a little bit.
Sure. Okay.
So I'm Italian first. I was born in Italy. My first language is Italian. Okay. So when I was playing growing up, the best players, respectfully, were Hispanic because they came from a football country. But the Italian Americans, the Polish Americans, the Greek Americans, the Russian Americans, like there was a huge immigrant demographic playing the game that you were like Giuseppe Rossi is from Jersey. He was like, I can't tell you, like Spanish Americans, crazy. Do you know that's died out? Do you know now, like I ran a youth club in Connecticut with 1,000 players. Maybe you had a little bit of Greek influence. But Italian, Polish, because what's happening is these kids are born in America to immigrant parents, but they're brought up the American way, which there's nothing wrong with. I'm not trying to say there's anything wrong with that. But what they do is they hang out with a friend group that likes NFL, that likes MLB, that likes NBA. So the way in which they grow is very American. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying? And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not trying. But they tend to go towards those sports. Okay. Now, I've been now doing soccer visa for 12 years. The Hispanic culture is starting to do the same thing. It's crazy. Like where there's more Hispanics playing baseball. There's more Hispanic. It was always, but it's even growing even more. So I don't know that as a culture that's what, hundreds of years old, that's taking people just naturally, organically and saying, no, this is our country. This is how we are. Not in a bad way. You follow MLB, follow NFL, you know what I mean? In a way, that's another reason why I don't think it would work. Because when I was growing up, half my team was European. Now it's like, kids, they're not.
It's being eroded. I would agree with you on that. And it's unfortunate because I think the erosion is also happening because it's a closed shop.
I agree.
And then they're not being included. But there is an erosion. Maybe Southern California is still like the last standing bastion of this culture, because if I go around the parks here, there are, and you see them, Hispanics. I'm from Argentina, Argentine heritage. All my family's from Argentina. So I see them playing in the parks, and they say, oh, the kids here, they don't play in the park like they do in Brazil or in Argentina. Yeah, it's not like Brazil. Don't get me wrong, Joe. It's not like Argentina. Don't get me wrong. But who do I see playing pickup? I see the Mexicans. I see the Latinos here, and I don't see the white boys doing it.
They got their phone out. They're doing speed ladder. They're doing a couple shots at the field, and then they're tying their shoes up. They're putting a video of them tying their shoes up, and then say they're not just like.
One more thing, Joe, on this point, because I don't want to let it slide, and I want to hear you as a club owner kind of react to it. So, on the issue of making money as a club owner, right? Because you posed it to me from US. Who's making money in USL? I said probably nobody. Okay. I think that the investment is a different type of investment. It's not an investment to make, you know, positive cash flow and have profits. I think the investment of owning a club at these higher levels, particularly here in the States but globally as well, is that the asset itself is a rare one. You can't make more really of Division I clubs. You can't make more, you know, Division II clubs. I mean, you can, but it's very rare. And so you purchase this thing instead of putting your money in the bank, instead of investing in the S&P 500, instead of investing in gold, you purchase it, or instead of investing in real estate, you purchase this particular asset. You sit on it for years and years and years. You try to get yourself promoted overseas, but here in the United States, you don't have to. You can just sit on it. And by the very virtue that it's rare and nobody can get in, it appreciates in value. So like Toronto FC, was purchased for $7-8 million franchise fee. And now, you know, according to Forbes, it's worth $700 million. So that's a 100x appreciation over the course of just 15 years for doing nothing.
Well, because it's America, it's the land of this amazing show that they put on. Like Messi came because, you know, like people are coming because it's America. Like, you know, in a way, people are still like, they look at the NBA, they look at the way entertainment business is in America, and they're like, I want to go be a part of that. But here's the thing. Okay, that's MLS.
USL as well.
Think about this, though. Look, Rio Grande Valley. Remember them, the Toros?
Sure.
That's a billionaire.
Sure.
He said, his exact words were, this is pointless.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a billionaire. So
yeah.
You're a USL owner, right? And you got Big Daddy overlooking you all the time. You can't pay $300 million to do an MLS franchise, right? You can't. So you're paying $20 million, right? Or is it 100? No, it's $20 million, yep. To buy a USL championship side. And first year it's fun. Second year it's fun. Third year, you're like, okay, it's still fun, but it's a charity. And you're not even the biggest fish. At what point do you say, what am I doing this for? You know?
No, you're limited.
Teams come in, come out. You know what I mean?
Totally. You're limited because you can't get promoted. That's the whole idea. However, Joe, like when they first get in, like San Antonio FC or Orange County FC, like right now it's like $20 million. And I'm going off the top of my head. Hope folks don't hold me to that. But when they got in, the franchise fee was much lower. So they have had appreciation of their asset, even though it was USL. So from if I'm a billionaire, which I'm not, so I can't know the psychology exactly. I'm just looking at monetary stuff. If I'm a billionaire, like the Rio Grande Valley guy, he doesn't give a shit if his franchise appreciated from $5 million to $20 million. That's a waste of his money. You know, he'd rather put that $5 or $20 million to work in other assets that are going to go way beyond $20 million. That's why he gets rid of it.
100%. It's hard because I think like Americans, like it's different. Like I think European owners or owners from China and these other places, and Saudi, they're banking on the ticket sales. They're banking on the uniforms also to, and obviously there's a prestige ownership. Like it's amazing to own. Like I'm the owner of City. You know what I mean? But in the States, I don't know that intelligent businessmen that are not investing, like if you're investing $300 million, it's different. You got stupid money. You got fuck you money. You're like, let's bet. Sure. But someone who's investing $20 million, I think that's why you see so many teams coming in and out. It's my thought process, right? Because like Austin Bold had to move. Then you got, you know, teams in California folded. I forget what the team was in the USL Championship in California. I forget now. But so many teams come in and out of the league, you know?
Totally, man. Well, I can talk forever on this stuff, but I want the folks to appreciate you more as a club owner as well. And I'm interested too. Like, how did that happen, dude? How did you come in and, I mean, how did you get the money and say, you know what? Cool. Purchase a Romanian third division team.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good question. So Soccer Visa, we grew Soccer Visa from like an idea in my room in Iceland to being a youth club in Connecticut with 1,000 players. And when COVID hit, we got out of it and we had some money and we were like, let's move somewhere crazy. Like, and try to build players up and sell them because I have a lot of contacts at really good places. So let's take this wild business idea and see if we can do it. So we moved to Costa Rica and really, we blew it out. It was amazing. Like there were people coming from around the world that were paying for our service to come to our development center and we were able to move them. Did we move anyone to like Man City? No, but we were moving them to realistic places where they can start their career. I mean, Davis Robey went to a D1 college, never played. It was called Marist in New York. And he never played. And he went from that, from us, to Spartak Trnava in the UEFA Europa League. And he's on the bench. So he was not on the bench at Marist to being on the bench at Spartak Trnava. So we placed players in realistic environments and it just, the business grew. And then we had an opportunity to move to Europe. We had some money saved up and we were like, let's come over here and be 50% owners of this team, Olympia. Now, here's the thing, though, Gary. We did our homework. We did all the financial, you know, everything on the club. But they gave us fake reports. So what was supposed to be 50% owner with not too much debt due to the books they gave us, okay,
turned out to be there a lot of money in debt. We've already moved our company here. We're not going to be 50% owners. We're going to have to be 100% owners because we've already invested. And now we're cleaning up a club or trying to rebuild a club, if that makes sense.
Got it. Got it, man. How long has it been?
A year.
Oh, it's fresh.
Yeah, it's hard. It's been a hard year too.
But I could imagine, dude. So is your primary, what's like your highest expense, if you don't mind me asking?
Salaries. So salaries are high and we're the lowest budget in the league. We're about $485,000 to run our club a year, operational costs, right? About 60% of that is salaries. The hard part is when we came, because we were foreign investors, everyone changed. So like, for example, the stadium was $400 a month to rent.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's $1,000 a game. Mm-hmm. And if we don't use the stadium, we don't have a stadium, which means the league kicks us out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of political things that happen, but I don't want to sit here and bitch like we're not winning because of that. It's just, it's a lot of rebuilding, you know, and we got to go through these growing pains.
No, of course, man. I can't relate directly. Obviously, I've never owned a club. I would love to own a club one day. I would do it here in the States if the system were open, because I could start it at the lowest tier, which is manageable, and work our way up. But I will say, you know, from a coaching perspective, because my brother's a coach, and he got hired on as the USL League One head coach for the brand new franchise here in the Antelope Valley. So you start from zero. You have no roster. You have absolutely nothing. So I can sympathize, at least from a distance, the complications that might exist.
Yeah, we got a real strong, like it's a big club. It's 100 years old. Like if we were in first place, they'd say we could get like 5,000 to 8,000 each game in a third division. So it's a good, it's a big club. And we haven't done well in results. We just haven't done well. And there, I mean, it's been tough, man. The fans are tough. You know what I mean? They don't know that we saved the club from bankruptcy. Well, they do know. Actually, they do know we saved the club from bankruptcy, but they don't care about that. They're like, that was your choice. You chose to come in. We want a winning team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So what's the plan then? How do you improve the roster? How are you going to get these players to come in? Are you looking from the outside? What's the roster composition now? Is it foreigners? Is it mostly domestic players?
So it's half foreigners, half Romanians. You have to have 12 Romanians on the roster, right? You have to. You have to have 3 juniors from Romania in the game for 90 minutes. So they have to be, like this year's 2005, 2006. You need at least 3 of those, you know, either or. Doesn't have to be all 06. It can be 2006, 01, 05, 205, 106. But you need to have 3 juniors in the team for 90 minutes. But the cool part is about Romania. The reason why we chose Romania, we were going to buy a team in Italy. But a lot of our players are from North America. And the visa process in Italy, Spain. Like if you're American, don't go play in England. Don't go play Spain. Don't go play in Italy. Because even if you do well in Spain's fifth division, let's say, and you're probably there on a student visa or, you know, like a visitor visa, you cannot play higher than third tier unless you have a certain amount of cap for your national team. Or the league's going to pay you, I believe it's a minimum of $275,000 a year. Just no one's going to get that. You know what I mean? So Romania has really easy to get foreigners' visas. And it has, the Romanian Federation has a partnership with almost every Caribbean country and every African country, where if I sign like a Nigerian, he doesn't count as a foreigner. He counts as a Romanian.
Mm.
A Jamaican doesn't count as a foreigner, counts as a Romanian. So that was what, you know, was cool about it. So we have half and half. Our average age, though, is 19 on the field at all times.
Very cool, man. And so where are you going to get fresh players from? Are you guys just scouting the league? And just going from there, like what's that process?
Well, we have a lot of contacts, luckily, from just being in the game so many years. So, but I like to sign underdogs. I can't sign players for a lot of money. It's my money and I don't have the means that here. Most of the clubs are owned by the local town and the government. And they're pumped in with $1 million, $2 million each year. I don't have that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My money. So I have my development center where guys from around the world come. Like we get guys from fourth tiers in France who pay a fee, come stay, come train with me. And if I like them, I'll sign them and pay them. So we get around 200 to 400 players, it depends, a year that are coming out. Not only trying out for me, though, like Nate Stainwash was at Detroit City FC, right? That's a soccer visa guy that we helped. Sean Reynolds won a USL championship with Louisville City. That was a guy working at Home Depot that came to us and we placed there. So guys from around the world come in and we try to put them at a realistic level, you know? And every once in a while, you hit somebody that can go play top league in Portugal or Liga MX. We had players go to Querétaro and play in Liga MX. That was pretty cool.
Got it. Man, it must be tough, dude, running the business. Because everybody thinks it's glamorous, this world of professional soccer. And I tell them because they know I run an online coaching education sort of business, right? But they don't ask me about that. They ask me about, hey, Gary, oh, you're an agent, or you own an agency. Wow, amazing. I'm like, no, it is not amazing. It is not glamorous. It is 1% of the time, maybe I'm a VIP in a stadium box having dinner with the owner. 1% of the time. 99% of the time, Joe, it's fucking fires and chaos and complaining and all fucking bitching and moaning, and it's a disaster. It's not glamorous.
I was an agent for 1 year, right? Tried to be, and I did well with it. I hated it. Kissing ass.
And I don't do that.
But you kind of have to sometimes.
No, totally.
Mm-hmm. The other part is, you're right, the players. They expect you send them to second division Poland, let's just say, right? And the culture is different. They're in culture shock. And they're expecting, after a year of finishing mid-table and not having the best stats, that they're going to move to the top league in Poland. It's like, no, it doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? You might have to be there 3 years and make a name for yourself before you even entertain the move, you know? So I get it, you know, bless you for that. You
know? No, another video I saw of yours, it reminds me of this. And it's a saying that we have in Argentina, that football has no memory. So players, for instance, they'll always cling on to what they've done in the past. Oh, I was on the youth national team. I played a U20 World Cup, you know, and now you're 24, right, by the way. And you're thinking about those days as if that gives you the resume to now, right, years later, to be something big. No, man, it's what have you done this week, let alone 4 years ago? Nobody gives a shit.
You're 100% right. And the worst part is, they don't want us to, like, they go to these D1 colleges that have better facilities than the Premier League clubs. And then you send them to a third division team who don't have close to the facilities of their college team. And they're like, we play on grass, but there's path. Yeah, this is real life, bud.
Yeah.
This is real. Your college has 20,000 kids there, 10,000 kids there, 3,000 kids there that pay 60 grand a year. You get what I'm saying? They can afford these facilities. You know, we're a pro team. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what's made us, to answer your question, like, the reason why we're able to fund this is because Socrates has grown for just telling people the truth. So we get a lot of guys that come out to us and we hold seminars, like, how do agents work? How do you get contacts? Realistically, what's your level and what can you expect in terms of salary and your life expectancy as a pro? Like, realistic. And they'll just go like this, shit. So we've had a lot of guys that are good players come up to me after they come and they're like, Joe, thank you so much. I'm going to retire. And not because I don't love the game, because what you said about how hard it's going to be to get there is real. And I'm not ready to make those sacrifices, you know? So you kind of opened my eyes. So thank you. And I think that's what's been able to grow our company to fund a project like this.
Amazing, dude. Amazing. When did you start Socrates? I know you gave me your whole trajectory, but how many years has it been?
2012.
2012.
Yeah. Did our first ever combine, and then it just grew. You know, and I think our mission here is to get this club stable. We sold a player this year. That was the first player in third league history. In a year, we were able to sell him. It was an Inter Miami boy who got released, didn't make it to the reserve or first team. He came in, did really well. After about 5 months, Odabasi in the Kazakhstan Premier League bought him. So that was really cool. You know, so the goal is to stabilize the club, maybe move in the next 5 years, 2 to 3 players, make a little bit of money on it. And then once the club is stabilized, you said it best, there's a bigger market value. Mm-hmm. So can we make a return on our investment?
Got it, man. So you would not recommend club ownership?
I would recommend it if you have money, you're okay with putting your money into such a big passion project. Like, look, all the money I put into this, it's not coming back.
For sure.
You know, so it's like, it's a big passion project, you know? I mean, I guess I want to create the environment I never had as a player. Like, a real chance, and I think that's probably what drives it. So
I was going to ask you that too, because that is in part what drives me so much to do this, because I don't have to be doing this stuff, man. I don't have to. Like, I got a degree in physics and mathematics. I've worked as an engineer out of college for a while. I could just go back to being an engineer and, you know, making $200,000-$400K a year, or whatever. I don't need this football. And people think there's so much money in football. It's not true, man. It's not true, especially from an agent or agency perspective or a club ownership perspective. We already touched club ownership. Money's hard to come by. Number one, you're not getting wealthy off of this thing if you aren't already wealthy. And from the player representation side, unless you happen to get the lottery of capturing a gem, unless Christian Pulisic is in your stable, you know, and you just happen to land him or somebody on that order, bro, you're struggling. You ain't making shit. If an agent takes a player to the Romanian third division, second division, or even the first division at times, you ain't making money, bro. You ain't making any money.
Yeah, first division is maybe $3,000 to $5,000 in commission. Maybe.
Yeah, no.
That do you need to make a living,
bro? Folks have no idea. Yeah,
and that's what I tell players. So players are like, I need an agent. I'm like, oh yeah. I'm like, where do you play? They're like, MPSL. I'm like, okay. So I'm your agent. This is a great. I love this seminar we do here at Socrates. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm your agent. How much am I making this year? Well, if you move me and I get sold, okay. Okay. I was like, so what's the, 4%, what's 4% of your salary this year? Six. What is it? And they're like, then they do the numbers. I'm like, all right, you're going to make $1,000 a month, 12,000 a year. You do the math. Mm-hmm. And they're like, so I was like, how many of you do I need to make a profit, to make a living? And they're like, shit. So it's like, this is why big agents don't work with you. Even if you're really good. If you don't have a value and they can't make commission, you're not going to waste their time.
Yeah.
Players don't.
100%.
Players don't know that. And that's the thing about the States that's crazy. And I think once that changes, then we'll have a chance. Is these guys are not educated on how the industry of football truly works. They still see it as mom and dad bring me to my youth club. I go to high school or MLS Next Pro. I go to college and then I'm ready to play pro. And because NBA, NHL, all these clubs are this amazing limelight around it, because I become a pro, I'm gonna have that same limelight. That's just not true.
Yep.
And till that changes, dude, look at how many different nationalities we have in the States. You're telling me we really can't do well as a national team? I know it's a huge topic, everyone speaks about it, but come on, let's be completely honest. We don't have Americans. We have Russian Americans, North American, African American, Italian Americans, Hispanic American, and we can't field the team. You know what I mean? Like, I can go on and on with my
same, brother. I feel like we're on the same, similar missions, a little bit different, but similar missions. And our mission has always been to educate and to tell the truth. And folks here in the States, they don't want the players and the families to know the truth. They don't want you to know. So they keep it in the dark.
Dude, U.S. soccer makes so much money. I remember owning my youth club, and every time we signed a new player, we had to get a new player pass. It was $30. And I was doing the math. I'm like, just for a player pass that we print out and laminate is $30. How many youth soccer players play? Oh, tournament fees. There's commission that goes to U.S. soccer. Oh, I didn't know. So like, U.S. soccer is a big mafia, and they're doing an amazing job of being a big mafia.
That's their skill. They're world class at it, bro. World class. They're gangsters.
They're straight up. They're running the best organized, not crime, but organization that you can, You said it best. Sure. Look, MLS runs everything. The top agents in MLS run everything.
No, they're all in bed together, dude. Because an agent is supposed to work for the best interest of the player. But here, they don't work for the best interest of the player. They could give a shit about the player. Unless they are the top of 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 the pile, like a designated player in MLS, they don't care. They don't care. They would rather, or they actually do, please the league and the general managers and the VPs and the owners. That is what they actually do. They work against the interests of the player. They don't negotiate hard for the player, and they make up shit, Joe. They actually tell players, I know this because they tell me the stories, dude, and then I get the story from the franchise themselves. They'll tell the player, oh yeah, I fought hard for you. We negotiated these sorts of things. You're getting the best deal. It's all a fucking lie.
Because they have to. They're not going to, It's a show. It's a show. Trust me, I know. There's so many. It's crazy. But then again, look, football in Europe is game.
It's corrupt too.
It's here fixed. I mean, I've been part, I've seen it like firsthand where I've been part of it. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like fix games.
you know? So it's corrupt wherever you go. And that's the thing, the entertainment business, right? If you're in the entertainment business, you got to know how to move around that.
For sure, man, for sure. Let's assume that you stabilize the club. You have a challenge ahead of you for sure. And if for some reason you end up getting out of club ownership, what would be next? Do you want to continue doing the soccer visa stuff? Do you have other ideas?
You know, now that I'm getting older, I've been doing it for so many years. I think about that a lot more. It's like, do I want to go back into coach? I can probably get a good coaching job somewhere, like maybe USL Championship, or I can get a job like maybe second league in Sweden or top league in Iceland or second league in Iceland. Like I have good contacts there. But then the lifespan of a coach is what, 2 to 3 years max? And then I'm back doing the same thing. I don't know. It's something that I don't have an answer for you, but I've definitely been thinking about. You know what I mean? It's like, I love this game for everything, but I've seen it at the lowest level and at a decent level. I haven't seen it at the highest level, but I've seen it at a decent level. And it seems the same even the higher level you go, where it's more of a, what's the word? It's more of like a celebrity wannabe status than actually the love of the game. And I don't know that I'm okay with that. Of course, if I'm making that type of money, of course, right? Who wouldn't be? But it doesn't feel good as like, there's a lot of things higher level you go that just aren't right. You know, you said the best lies. I think a lot of people don't even know the higher level you go, how much more corrupt it is. And I'm talking about like, I've seen two clubs in a top league because I was able to be part of a meeting, like talk about things. And it's like, oh, that really going on. You know what I mean?
It's okay. So you don't know, you might get out altogether.
No, I don't know if I could ever be out. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. It's a drug. It's a drug. It really is. You're addicted to that. And being in Europe, it's the highest highs, lowest lows. When you win, you're like, oh, we're going to go to the first division. We're going to qualify for Champions League. You know. But then when you lose, you're just like, "There's no, we're never going to, this thing going to work. What are we doing? Are we fucking crazy? You know? So that's, you know. But I love it. I mean, if you're ever in Europe and you want to come see a crazy project, come on over and check it out.
No, 100%. I can't tell you the number of times, and you run this business, so you know. But the number of times that I get messages or emails from players, I got one just yesterday saying, hey, Gary, we just won Dallas Cup, U17, you know, here's my highlight reel. I've scored this many goals, you know, and awesome for the kid, awesome for the family. They're marketing themselves. They're putting themselves out there and everything. And I just don't have a place to send them really because, I mean, usually so the level, right, that people reach out to me for, predominantly is for, you know, the lower tiers, the tiers that you would just be starting out at, maybe like the Romanian third tier, the Polish second division, you know, whatever it is. But just from experience, when I tell them these things, they think I'm lying to them. And I just don't have the capability of placing them in the Portuguese first division or something. And I'm like, bro,
they know. I have kids that come here and they're like, oh, I could play third Bundesliga. You could play third Bundesliga. They shit on MLS team.
Yeah,
there's 24,000 to 30,000 average in third Bundesliga games. Yeah, I have players. I swear to God, they're like, I'm like, where can you play? Like, if I can play you, I can play in third league in Germany. Are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
So they don't know, and they won't know till you live. I didn't know till I went to Italy, and I was like, I am not close. It's gonna take me a long time to even get close to this level. It was an eye opening. You know what I mean? Finland's top league. I got to play against Pukki. And you're like, shit. Like, there's another level to this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. And once they get over there and they have to get into the grind and things aren't working out, they just fold. Most of them just fold.
100%. What happens when you're not scoring goals and you're a foreigner and you were brought to score goals and the president walks by you and doesn't even want to shake your hand? Or what about when you go to a country like Romania and you're, I'm sorry, black. And there are some moments that are very not fair. Let's just use it that way. Can you deal with it? What happens when you go to Italy on trial, which happened to me at Serie B level when I was 23, and you get to the stadium and they're like, yeah, you change in that locker room there. Don't change with the first team yet. Like, while mommy and daddy are bringing them to the college and they're showing him this amazing facility, it's not like that. Like, or here's a good topic, or here's a good point. In America, we're brought up on team, right? Team, 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 team. In Europe, we play in a team, so we know we have to do well in the team, but I have my role. And if you do your role and I do my role, we're going to win. But I don't want to hear you say, come on, team, let's go. They don't want to hear that shit. They don't want to hear it. They want you to say, do your job, get it done. If you're an outside back, put the ball in the box. If you're a striker, get there. End of story. And that's the biggest thing that North Americans struggle with is like when they come here, they're in the locker room, like, all right, guys, let's go. Let's do this. And the Europeans are like, what the fuck is this guy doing? You worry about yourself. I'm going to worry about me. Just pass the ball at the right moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude.
That's a big thing. It's a big thing.
Do you have somebody working for you that does the content development that you put it? Because you put a lot of stuff out there, man.
Yeah, it's all me. So I spent like, I have like Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesday where I'll sit for like a 4-hour block and just create the content. It used to be a lot bigger. I used to have a whole team. And we have a good team here. But the content part is hard to do. But when we invested all this money here, we had to make the cutbacks on some things. So I do all the content now.
Amazing, dude. Amazing. You work your ass off, bro. I love it.
Yeah, it's got to do it. I mean, I wish you could see it firsthand because I think you'd see it like even more different. It's like, it really is just passion. Like now that I understand the business, I'm like, I look at players and I'm like, you guys have no idea what it is. Like I'm paying for your dream. So if you're going to come here and you're not going to give me everything, see you later. Because I'm paying for your dream. When I pay your salary, when I pay your housing, your electric bill, and I'm in the office till 9 o'clock later tonight working just to keep your apartment lights on so you can train well.
They just don't know. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I wish the gratitude and those sorts of things would be there, but I don't blame them. I see it kind of like the parent-child relationship, and you know, the cycle's always the same. The child then becomes a teenager, right? And the teenager thinks that they know more than the parent, right? Yeah. And then the teenager grows up to be an adult and a parent themselves, and then they look back at themselves as a teenager, they're like, fuck, I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. I had no idea. So these kids that are playing pro or whatever, eventually, maybe when they're in their 30s or 40s or even become involved, they'll finally realize it. They're like, fuck, I had no clue.
Yeah. But you want to know too. I mean, and look, I'm not going to sit here and say, look, you have to evolve with time. Like sure. You and I, like there's a new age coming. Like we can't be stuck in what we did. Like let's be honest. But football's changed too a lot. You know, yeah. Sports, there's no loyalty in it, which makes club ownership harder. Like you used to have Totti be at Roma for his whole career. I remember Del Piero, Manchester United came in for Del Piero when they got relegated because of the match fixing, right? Sir Alex was like, all right, Del Piero, now it's time to come to United. And he's like, you want me to leave the club now when it needs me more than ever? I don't know if those days are still here. And we have to evolve. But that makes it hard for us because I would have died to play for a coach and club that just wanted me to do well. But now it's like, I know you want me to do well and you're a nice person, but if you can't pay me the same amount as that guy, I'm going to go there.
Yeah.
Respect too. You know?
100%, 100%. And again, I don't blame them because the clubs are that way too. The clubs have no loyalty to their players. They'll be like, ah, fuck this fool. Let's get rid of him. Even though he's been here his whole life and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's true too. That's very true. Mm-hmm. So, well, yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
No, of course, man. Anytime. Any parting words? Because we're coming up on the 1 hour mark. Usually I keep these to 1 hour, but I have no time limit.
No, just thank you. And I'm going to be following you even more close after hearing you speak the way you speak. It sounds like what I speak about. I mean, you said words that I say, like public enemy number one, or like, and that's how I feel a lot of times. Not because I'm whistleblowing, because I don't think there's any like whistleblow honest truth. Like if you really put two and two together, a lot of things that don't make sense in the U.S. soccer system don't make sense, that are just a facade. And we just speak about it.
Cool, brother. All right, man. Well, let's do this again sometime. And hopefully next time I'm in the old continent, I can swing by.
Come through whenever. It's a pleasure. Good luck to you.
Pleasure, brother. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program.
Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.